Okay, can you hear me, everybody? Am I close enough to the microphone? Yes, okay, that's very good. Right, so I'm going to put my stopwatch on. Not that I don't go on too long, but it makes sure that I don't speak too fast. Okay, so good morning, everyone. I was just going to say what a wonderful breakfast that was. I didn't imagine that you could have so many things for breakfast. And did anybody notice what was on the porridge?
Yes.
Beetroot. I was absolutely amazed. It was delicious. But that was great. Such a lot of effort being put into that. And I want to thank you all for coming out this morning as well, because it was quite a blustery. And as I was driving up the A19, I kept being sort of dragged over. So thank you all for coming out. You could all be tucked up at home underneath your duvet. So thank you very much for coming. So before I begin my talk, I thought it only proper that we should try and get ourselves into the Christmas spirit. And I thought we'd start off with a few jokes. I'm sure you've read some yourself this morning. And I want to apologise before I start, because these ones I've got really are Christmas cracker worthy. Okay, so what do you call a kid who doesn't believe in Santa? A rebel without a clause. What do you call an elf who sings? A rapper. What else? And what's the difference between the Christmas alphabet and the ordinary alphabet? Well, the Christmas alphabet has no L, of course. And finally, a small boy was writing a letter to Jesus about the Christmas presents he badly wanted. "I've been really good for 6 months now," he wrote. But after a few moments' reflection, he crossed it out and wrote 3 months. After a pause, that was crossed out, and he put 2 weeks. There was another pause, and that was crossed out. There was another pause, and he got out from the table and went over to the crib scene that had figures of Mary and Joseph. He picked up the figure of Mary and went back to his writing and started again. "Dear Jesus, if you ever want to see your mother again..." Do you know, I had such fun researching jokes for this talk, and that last one really, really made me laugh. But, you know, the real story of Mary and how she became to be the mother of Jesus is actually quite fascinating. And I'd like us to talk about that this morning. Excuse me looking over my glasses, but they're reading ones, and I can't see you if I do that. So excuse the school teacher look. But before we talk a little bit about Mary, what I want to do this morning is ask you all a question, and it's this. How many of you here, if you did believe there was a God, could believe that this God could do anything? Absolutely anything, after all. That's what being a God is all about, isn't it? Nothing would be impossible, nothing too hard, and the laws of physics wouldn't have to apply. This God would be over everything and everyone. He wouldn't be natural like you and I. He would be supernatural. So, a show of hands, please. Who thinks that a God could be able to do the impossible? Very good, that's most of you. So, okay, with that in mind, let's go to this scene now. I want you to imagine this scene. We've got Mary, who is a young Jewish girl, and she's engaged to be married to Joseph. She's not yet married, so she's still a virgin, and she gets a visit from an angel. Now, I expect at this point, many of you are having visions of all the nativities and things you've been as you've, you know, your kids have been to, and even maybe have been in yourself when you were a child. I remember when I was 5, I actually played Mary, and I don't remember very much about it, given that it was 50 years ago. But apart from the fact, one thing I do remember, which was a little bit odd, was my husband Joseph alongside me very woodenly saying, "Do not worry, Mary, God will not forsake us." And that's basically all I can remember about it, but it's funny the things you remember. Anyway, back to Mary and the visit from the angel. So the angel has arrived in all his splendour, and he announces to Mary that God has chosen her to have a son, and she is to call him Jesus. Mary quite rightly asks, how's this going to be? You know, I'm still a virgin. And so the angel goes on to explain that this baby would not be conceived in the usual manner, but that the power of the Holy Spirit would overshadow her, and she would become pregnant and give birth to God's son. Now, is that amazing? Yes. Is it scary? Absolutely. But impossible? No. Not if we believe in a supernatural God who can do anything, including a virgin birth. But you know what is amazing about this story about Mary? It's that she actually said yes. And that yes changed her life forever. And over 2,000 years later, every Christmas, children all over the world dress up like her. Her story is told in the Bible. She's been written about in books, plays, and films, and all because she said yes to God. Now, at this point, I'd just like to change tack here, and I want to tell you a little bit about myself, my background, and my journey. Now, I have four sisters and two brothers. I'm the third oldest, so I'm smack bang in the middle of them all. Now, we all have the same mother, but there are four different fathers, and all of them are different nationalities. There is a Sri Lankan, a Burmese, a Nigerian, and there is actually an English one. So when you actually get us all in the room together, we do look a little bit like the League of Nations. No one would actually guess by looking at us that we were brothers and sisters. We love each other dearly all the same. Now, because there were family problems, even from right at an early age, I was taken into care, me and my brother and sister, from before I was the age of one until I was about five. And by the time I got home, back home with my mum, she had actually married, and there was a new brother and a new sister on the scene. So we were now six, I think. Six of us. Unfortunately, the man that she married was not a good man. And he abused some of us physically and sexually. And he was generally a very unpleasant man all round, including to my mum. I remember lots of scenes when he was they were having fights and the blood and things all over the place. So when I was about eight, she actually left home with my older brother. And she left the rest of us with him. She didn't actually know about the sexual abuse because I know she wouldn't have left us with him if she'd known about that. So when I was about nine, those of us who were left, including his own children, we decided we would run away. And we literally stuffed loads of stuff in a whole assortment of bags because we didn't have suitcases. And it was absolutely rammed. We all had bags, about a couple of each, and there was stuff hanging out them all over the place. Because we had actually decided that we were going to go run away and live in the New Forest and survive there happily ever after. The things you think of when you're young. Fortunately, I suspect it was fortunately, some strangers called the police. I think as we were walking along the streets with these bags and things hanging out all over the place, we looked a little bit suspicious. Now, they called the police, and actually we were picked up by the police and carted off to the police station. Well, to cut a very long story short at that point, the whole thing ended up at the Old Bailey. He was taken to court, and he was actually jailed for 5 years. And then we were made wards of court, so we had to be put back in care, and we were not allowed to leave until we were 18. Now, I mean, obviously that was a very, very brief run-through, and there were loads of things that I wouldn't tell you that did happen through that time, but no one goes through that sort of childhood and comes out of it unscathed or unaffected. I am, and, I was, generally quite an easygoing person, quite an upbeat kind of person, and I enjoyed good friendships at school, although I went to many different schools, particularly my junior schools, because we were in sort of children's homes as an emergency stop till they found us somewhere permanent. So I think I had about four junior schools in the last couple of years. So the secondary school was quite stable. I went through just one, and I had enjoyed good friendships there. And anyway, I just got on with life despite what had happened. But underneath it all, it was like I had this rucksack on my back, and in it, I was carrying round a load of stuff. Stuff like a low self-esteem, stuff like feeling really inadequate in a whole bunch of situations and circumstances, stuff like I didn't feel like I was a very clever person. I only had four O-levels, GCSEs for those of you who are younger, and I didn't have any other qualifications. I actually felt I was hopeless, I was hopeless at interacting with anyone outside of close friends. And when I was nervous, I spoke too fast, really fast. And to top that, I didn't just speak fast when I was nervous. I actually jumble up my words in the sentence. So in my mind, I could hear what I wanted to say, but the words came out all in the wrong order. So people would look at me rather strangely and think, what's she going on about? And all that did basically was make me less inclined to speak up. I never expected to amount to much or actually achieve much with my life. And if I could have summed up myself in two words, it would have been, I can't. It was like it was stamped across my forehead, I can't. I can't do this, I can't do that. I was always too scared, I felt too inadequate or too intimidated. And this is what I was carrying around with me every day. But what you have to understand is that this, for me, was normal. It was my normal. I didn't actually think anything of it. You know, it was just, I got on with life, but I had all this stuff on my back and I didn't realise it. I just decided to get on and do my best, but I didn't expect that to actually be anything great. Now, when I was about 16 or 17, my younger sister, Bernie, became a Christian. Now, I was really happy for her. She was happy, and she suddenly developed this amazing social life. She was out all the time. She talked about God incessantly, and, you know, I was really happy to listen. I remember going to her baptism, which was really very different and not what I expected. I was really fascinated with the people that were there. They were different. They actually seemed to be enjoying God, which was quite unusual, I thought. And they actually looked like they meant the words they were singing. It was a house church, so it was sort of in the 70s, quite unusual. The only thing I'd ever been accustomed to, maybe with your harvest festival, was sort of sit down, stand up, and used to be quite bored. So it was quite unusual going to her baptism, which was very, very lively. And the people were very, very interesting. I like people watching, and it made for an interesting time. Then one day when I was at home, something happened. My sister was talking to me about God, as usual, about church and all that sort of stuff. But in the middle of it all, she asked me this question. She said, Linda, are you a Christian? To which I replied, yes, of course, I believe in God, which I thought was a great answer. Only she came back with something else which really shocked me. And then it also made me really very angry. She said, I don't mean to be funny, Lynn. I thought, oh yeah, what's coming? She said, but the devil believes in God, and he certainly isn't a Christian. And then she said this is the bit that really made me angry. And you know where you'll go when you die if you're not? That's what she said to me. I couldn't believe it. Well, I was mad. I was so, so mad. I was fuming. And for someone who didn't swear, I actually turned the air blue. I did. I really swore badly at her, which was quite bad, but I was so angry with her. I mean, what I felt was, how dare she judge me like that and tell me, basically, I wasn't a Christian and I was off to hell. So I told her in no uncertain terms what she could do with her Christianity, and I forbade her to talk to me about God again. I was so, so angry. And I'm not really a person that gets angry that much, but this really pushed my buttons. Then that night when I went to bed and I started thinking about what she said, the thought crossed my mind, what if I'm not Christian? I knew I wasn't like Bernie, my sister, or her friends from church, and I could see the difference that God had made in her life. I could see that she seemed to know him rather than just know about him like I did. And then my anger changed and I suddenly got very scared. I thought, oh my word, what if I'm not a Christian? That means I'm going to that other place. But you know, because I had forbidden her to talk to me about God or anything like that, I was too proud to go and say to her, actually, I think you might be right, talk to me more, I need to hear more. I didn't do that, I was just too proud. So for 6 months, I sweated it out. And it was the longest 6 months in my life, all the time continually thinking and wondering what's going to happen to me, you know, who am I, what am I doing, what's life all about. But after 6 months, there came an opportunity for me to actually sort of raise the subject with her again. And that was basically, I turned 18, and it was time for me to leave the children's home. And I'd actually managed to get a place in the local hospital to start nurse training. You only needed 5 O-levels in those days. It wasn't a degree thing at all. Incidentally, just to so you know, I actually never finished my training, but that's another story which I'm not going to talk about here. So with this big move in mind from the children's home to do nursing, I said to her ever so casually, I might just come to church with you, you know, once I've moved into the nurse's home. And the excuse I gave about raising the subject then was that the lady in charge of the children's home really, really ridiculed my sister for her faith. And she really made fun of her and poked fun at her. And I sort of said, I might come along to church once I've moved out so that I wouldn't have her poking fun at me. And that's the excuse I made for having left anything so long. So I moved into the nurse's home one Sunday, and the very following Sunday, I went to church with my sister. That was the March 26th, 1978, which also just happened to be Easter Day, which was wonderful. So I went to church with her, and that morning at her church, they had a couple of baptisms, after which they asked if anyone wanted to give their life to Jesus. And by this point, I was absolutely desperate to do it. I don't know what I would have done if someone hadn't asked the question. Well, actually, when they asked the question, I literally ran to the front. I think my sister must have been quite shocked with having had my big blow-up a bit further back. I made the decision to get to know Jesus rather than just to know about him. I wanted to know him more. And in that moment, as I made that decision, like Mary, I said yes to God. And like Mary, my life has actually never been the same since. But you know, the first thing that really hit home to me, having made that decision, it was that I actually had a father. And this father would care for me, he wouldn't harm me, and he would protect me. A lot of people would say that having had such bad experience from earthly fathers, that it would make relating to God in that way difficult, seeing him as a father. But actually it didn't for me, and I think that was the grace of God that that happened. I just felt so safe with him, and that felt amazing. I just felt so secure. The other thing that I found that was quite unexpected, I didn't expect this to happen, was that within the church, I didn't just find an institution or a meeting of like-minded people. What I experienced was family, a place of belonging. It was quite a surprise. The church became my family. And for me, that was absolutely wonderful. Again, when you consider my background, it was just really amazing to sort of feel that sense of being a part of people who I knew loved me. And you know, when Martin and I married, the church that I was a part of at the time, knowing that I had no family to help, they actually stepped in and they offered to pay and sort out for our wedding reception. And we had 120 people to our wedding reception, and they did the lot. Because actually, that's what family does, and that's who they were to me. A couple of years after becoming a Christian, I actually met my husband, Martin, at church. And he was the total opposite to me. He's confident, outgoing, clever. He actually became a doctor. He's a natural leader and was great with people of all ages. The sort of people that everyone just sort of, you know, they look to, they see him, they like him, and he's sort of the centre of attention type person. You know, we actually got married in 1982 when he was 21 and I was 22. So Martin and I have been married for 33 years now, and we absolutely love being together. Of course, we have our ups and downs. Who doesn't? It'd be amazing if no one ever had a row or anything like that. So we have to go through those things, and we deal with them. We don't allow them to push us apart. But, you know, the stability we have enjoyed is something I never saw or experienced as growing up. And I actually count it a real blessing and not something to be taken for granted. We now have three grown-up kids. Hannah is 31, Josh is 24, and Abby is 22, and all of them are married. And we have two wonderful grandchildren, two lovely boys, courtesy of Hannah. And I'm waiting extremely patiently for more. Okay? I love kids, and I can't wait for them all to have their kids. But having a great marriage and family wasn't the only difference saying yes to God actually made. One of the biggest differences outside of that for me has been that God has taken me from being an I can't sort of person to a with God I can sort of person. And to give you an idea how much of an I can't person I was, let me share a few stories with you. When I first started going to church, one of the jobs going was Welcoming people on the door as they came in and sort of waving people off as they went. Well, I couldn't do that. I didn't have a clue what to say to people. I couldn't even look people in the eye. I felt awkward and really uncomfortable. What if they wanted me to say more than just hello? I wouldn't have known what to say. The thought of it actually horrified me. So I avoided anything like that with a barge pole. Another time, I invited my neighbour round for coffee, as you do. A pretty normal activity, you would think. But once she was sat there, in my lounge, smiling at me, I panicked. I didn't know what to say to her. I did not have a clue. My mind went blank, and I'm sat there thinking, oh, I wish she wasn't here. You know, the thought of trying to have a conversation with her for an hour and a half, or less if I could get her out of the house sooner, actually was a major hurdle. Two things saved me. Firstly, Hannah, who was around 2 years old at the time, could talk the hind leg off a donkey that takes after her dad. And she was chattering away 19 to the dozen. But the conversation couldn't just resolve around Postman Pat. Even I knew that, you know. The second thing that saved me was that Martin was in the kitchen. I went into the kitchen and almost hysterically sort of said to him in a whisper, I don't know what to say, I'm sort of panicking like mad. And he just very calmly said, ask her about her holidays. Oh, the relief when he came with that question. Why couldn't I think like that? I went back in and I asked her about her holidays and she asked me about mine. And then I made another excuse to go into the kitchen. I said, and he gave me another question to ask her. And I'd go back in and I'd ask the question and we'd talk a little bit like that. And you know, it went on like that till she left. It really was that bad. I had to learn interpersonal skills at a very, very, very basic level. But you know what has been so great is that God gave me the courage to step up and work on them rather than step back and run out, which had been my normal default position. Around that time, I had a friend who was really bubbly and outgoing, and she moved up from London, because that's where Martin and I come from, and she moved... Have I lost my hat? Sorry. She moved up from London to Manchester, and she was living really close to me. And together we went to the shops that were just across the road from me, and they were my local shops, and I'd been living there a few years. Well, when we went in there, the shopkeeper knew her name. I thought, how on earth did she do that? I've been living here for years. And, you know, it's like God gave me someone else to help me. I watched her, and basically she spoke to everyone, anytime, anywhere, any place. And I thought, why, that's such a gift. You know, and I decided I'd put that into practice. So God brought someone up from London to be close to me, and sort of like, she didn't know it, I didn't say anything, but she mentored me without her knowing it. I decided to try and talk to everyone and anyone in any queue, anywhere, at any time. And that is really what I've done, and I still try to do, and I've had to do it with God's help because I've needed it. So that was some of the things I've had to do. But then something else happened to me. In 1998, we were abroad, Martha and I, we were at a conference, it might have been Argentina. And three different people while I was there, at three different times, totally all unconnected, came up and said something to me. Each of them said, in so many words, not exactly the same words, but each of them said that they felt God was saying that he wanted me to teach. I just want to say here as an aside again, that if you understand that being a Christian is about a relationship with God, because that is fundamentally what it is, then it shouldn't be surprising to hear that we can talk to him. We can talk to each other. On this occasion, when I was in Argentina, it was through these three people. At other times, it's been through reading the Bible or in other ways. But going back to God, using these three people to ask me to teach. And by using three different people at three different times, it also confirmed to me, unfortunately, that actually he did want me to teach. He did want me to speak. It wasn't just a one-off coincidence. Well, what do you think my response was? Well, this was it in a nutshell. What? God, you must be crazy. I've only just got comfortable talking with people one-on-one. And now you want me to stand up in front of a whole bunch of people and teach? Why would people want to listen to me? I've got nothing to say. I'll jumble my sentences. No way, not now, not ever. I can't. To put it mildly, I actually ranted at God and it lasted a few weeks. You know, I didn't want to do it. No way. I can't do that sort of thing, God. I can't do it. You've got the wrong person. I don't know what you're thinking about. But God, being God, When I stopped and allowed him to speak to me, he very gently replied, "You're right. On your own, you can't. But with me, standing alongside you, helping you, you can." So, after much argument with God, because it didn't just stop there, and in fear and in trepidation, I decided to give it a go. And I started off with really small steps, sort of like in-house group and things. And with Martin helping me, because he's actually an excellent speaker and a great communicator, my favourite in fact, and with God by my side, I have done it. And I've been absolutely amazed at what God has done through me and what I've been able to do with his help. I've spoken at small and large gatherings. I've preached on a Sunday mornings. I've spoken at conferences, maybe not as the main speaker, but at seminars. I've spoken in foreign countries where I've had to be translated. I've led and spoken at women's conferences. And here I am today, talking to you. You know, God can do the impossible. Also, over the years, God has been removing some of the stuff from my rucksack and putting new things in its place. Let me tell you about one such occasion. I was at a conference. I don't live at conferences, by the way. It just happens to be where God seems to have spoken to me. And we were in the middle of a time of worship. And during this time, I was thinking about God, as you do. When he put this most unusual thought in my mind, nothing to do with what I was thinking about, so it was right out of nowhere, right out of the blue. It was like God was speaking in my mind, and this is what he said. "You are the head, not the tail." That was it, that was all he said. Well, I just burst into tears. I think the people around me just assumed God was doing something for me, and they just left me to it. But that one line, which seems so random, just summed up how I viewed myself as the tail end, at the bottom, behind, beneath, below, as less than. But God was telling me something different. He saw me as the head. He was telling me my perspective of myself was all wrong. I was not the tail, I was the head. Do you know, I reckon in those few moments, God did what would probably have taken counsellors years and years to achieve. He changed my perspective. It was a supernatural moment. And that has made such a difference to my life. I'm no longer carrying that excess baggage around, that unnecessary weight, that lie around about myself. It was like God put his hand right into the bottom of my rucksack, pulled out my low self-esteem and said, "Now, see yourself through my eyes." God has also taken my fear of talking to people out of my rucksack and given me the ability to talk much more easily with people. In fact, I actually love being on the door these days. It's one of my favourite things at church, that is, not in my own house. So, am I the most amazing, confident person out there? No, I'm not. I still would consider myself quite shy. Am I the most amazing speaker? No, definitely not. I need to have my stopwatch here and I need to write everything out virtually word for word. I'm not the most amazing speaker. I've still got a lot of learning to do and growing to do in both areas. But from where I've come from, it actually feels pretty amazing. It might not be the virgin birth, but it's still a miracle in my eyes. Saying yes to Jesus was the best decision I've ever made. Or should I say he, has radically changed the course of my life. He's given me hope for my future when I didn't have any, and he's given me confidence to do and achieve more than I ever could have imagined. I really would call it miraculous. But you know, none of this is really about me. It's about Jesus. Jesus working in me and Jesus working through me. It really is all about him and what he has done. So maybe this year, when you come across a nativity, or you'll see more than just a cute school play or a traditional Christmas story. But you'll think of Mary and the miracle God did in her life when she said yes to him. And maybe, having heard my story, you'll see that he is still in the business of doing miracles in people's lives today. Why don't you talk to your friend who brought you and find out what God has done in their lives? And understand this, that he is ready and waiting to do miracles in the life of anyone who is willing to say yes to him. Thank you for listening. Have a great Christmas.